Hey there, podcast enthusiasts. Are you tapping into the potential of podcasting to boost your brand? Here's something remarkable. 67% of the U.S. population tunes into podcasts. That's not just listeners. It's a community. And let me tell you, the emotional bond between listeners and their favorite podcasts is stronger than ever. Don't just take our word for it. Visit catsdigital.com to explore success stories from advertisers who trust podcasting to deliver results. Discover more at katzdigital.com.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, November 19th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, I'm going to talk a little bit about Smile 2 and present an interview with writer-director Parker Finn. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com, and this podcast contains spoilers for Smile 2, so proceed accordingly. I remember being mixed on the first Smile, which was Parker Finn's feature directorial debut. It came out back in 2022. I remember really enjoying a majority of the movie, but I was pretty turned off by its ending, which I thought was a little over the top and maybe a little goofy for my tastes. I liked the lead performances from Sosie Bacon and the great Kyle Gallner. It had a killer premise that tapped into the spooky, unsettling vibes of films like The Ring and It Follows. The marketing campaign was really innovative and effective. I'm sure you probably remember they had people smiling at Major League Baseball games, sitting behind the plate and trying to freak people out that way. And there's this great underdog feeling to the movie because it was originally going to go straight to Paramount Plus, and then the studio decided to put it in theaters and it ended up making a lot of money. For Smile 2, I can thankfully say that I do not have the same problem because the ending of this sequel is maybe the best thing about it. Well, that and Naomi Scott's performance as Sky Riley, a pop star who becomes haunted by the Smile entity and whose sanity is slowly shredded as her life spins out of control. Naomi Scott, who I thought was one of the only decent parts of Disney's live-action Aladdin remake, is absolutely put through the ringer in this film, and she gives a tremendously physical performance that feels believable and real and honest and heartbreaking, especially in the scenes where the entity basically tricks Sky into doing things that she would never otherwise do. There's a scene where she's delivering a speech at a fancy party and the teleprompter leads her astray that features just a remarkable spiral of acting as things go from awkward to almost comically terrible. Really, really effective stuff. The scares are all really well crafted in this film. The set pieces are very well executed, especially a terrific long take involving Kyle Gallner's character that opens the movie and kind of sets the tone for the action to come. And then the ending, which again, spoiler alert, features Sky Riley killing herself on stage and effectively spreading the Smile entity to not just one person like we've seen before, but potentially thousands of concert goers, is the type of oh shit moment that sent me just buzzing out of the theater. So to mark Smile 2's digital release, which happens to be today, I had a chance to catch up with writer-director Parker Finn to talk about that ending, making the movie, working with Naomi Scott, and more. Let's take a break, and then we'll get back into my interview with Parker Finn.
This time of year, a good hoodie is absolutely essential. But it's tough to find one that will last through the season. That's why the American Giant Classic Full Zip Hoodie is made to last a lifetime, so you can count on it to bring you comfort and warmth year after year. Slate Magazine called it the greatest hoodie ever made, and from cotton to zipper, it's made right here in the USA. With timeless style, heavyweight fleece, a double-lined hood, and reinforced elbow patches, you can depend on it for years to come. Snag the hoodie that will bring you comfort for life, the American Giant Classic Full Zip. And save 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com when you use code CLASSIC24 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code CLASSIC24.
Hey there, podcast enthusiasts. Are you tapping into the potential of podcasting to boost your brand? Here's something remarkable. 67% of the U.S. population tunes into podcasts. That's not just listeners. It's a community. And let me tell you, the emotional bond between listeners and their favorite podcasts is stronger than ever. Don't just take our word for it. Visit CatsDigital.com to explore success stories from advertisers who trust podcasting to deliver results. Discover more at KATZDigital.com.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, Parker, how are you?
I'm good, Ben. How are you?
I'm great. Congratulations on Smile 2. So I want to ask, after the success of the first movie, when was it clear to you that you would have more resources this time around?
Oh, interesting. Well, you know, I made the first movie to be able to stand on its own. I didn't a million years think that there was going to be demand for a sequel. But after the release, when the opportunity arose and the studio came to me and said, hey, would you be interested in making a sequel? I knew that if I was going to come back to it, I wanted to do something unique and take a big swing. And so, I went away and I came back in and I pitched this sequel, this story of Sky Riley to the studio, thinking in the back of my brain, like, there's a real chance they say no to this because it's such a wild, crazy swing. And they said yes. And so I think there was an understanding that, hey, this inherently needs to be a larger film than the first, but not bigger just for the sake of bigger. I think sometimes sequels make that mistake. I wanted it to feel organically bigger and really feel true to the world of the character. And we had a larger budget, but it definitely, there's so much more movie and so much more to do. So it was still very much, fitting a 10-gallon movie into a 5-gallon bucket.
Okay. So you knew when you were writing the script that you would maybe have more resources to work with. You knew at that point you could expand the scope a little bit.
Definitely. Yeah. And once the studio had signed off and said, yes, I can go and write this draft of the movie. Definitely. But of course, working with a studio, and Paramount's been wonderful to me, but it's still always a negotiation. I mean, everybody wants, they're like, oh, can't you do it for the same price as the first one? But, we needed a little more to get this one done.
Yeah. So you mentioned Sky Riley. I cannot take credit for this observation, but one of my colleagues was wondering if the rehearsal scene with Sky singing with all of her dancers was inspired by Dua Lipa's Houdini music video. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's pretty spot on. It looks good.
I'll need to watch. Is this the one where Sky's actually on stage?
No, in the rehearsal, like with the...
In that space where she hurts her back?
Yeah.
Interesting. No, I need to watch the Houdini music video. Apparently I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's great. So Naomi is just incredible in this movie. And I imagine the relationship between a director and a lead actor in a horror film like this must be pretty special because you're asking a lot of her in this film. I was wondering what she brought to this role that you didn't expect.
Ooh, interesting. Naomi was the perfect storm for this character, 100%. And really is one of the, the creative partnership has been one of the highlights of my career thus far, getting to work together. And as far as what I didn't expect, I mean, Naomi obviously has this incredible, gravitas to her. And she's so talented as an actor. And I was so excited to get to show a side of her that people haven't seen before on screen. And like, obviously she sings, she dances. These are those things. I think I was blown away by this X factor that she has, where when she would go into Sky, you just like immediately believe that she is a pop star. There's something about her that is hard to put your thumb on, where you're like, I understand that this person would be a mega famous celebrity in this world. But one of the things that really surprised me was Naomi has a wonderful sense of humor and really understood the funny moments and could play them without playing at them. And, constantly she really understood how to make things funny. And I loved that about her so much. I'd also say that like one of the surprising things that we discovered that I also asked her if it was okay to lean into, and she said yes, was, you know, Naomi produces an incredible amount of snot. And we decided that we were going to like play that for the character. And so like all that snot and everything you see in the movie, that's all Naomi. And and I love how gross and unsettling that is.
So these movies deal with some pretty serious subject matter, but there's also something a little silly about the primary imagery of people smiling menacingly at a character. And as a director, how do you go about making sure that the movie never tips so far that the audience starts focusing on that kind of silliness? Do you just like make sure that the smiles are always creepy enough? Like, do you have a secret to keeping that balance right?
Well, I think the people's mileage will vary with the smiles, no question. Some people it's incredibly effective for. Other people, that's the least scary part of the movie for them. And I totally get that. I think for me, I love my horror to be infused with absurdism as well. And I think, and it's not just the smiles, it's also how a lot of the scenes unfold. And I love, if I can be operating in a lane where an audience is so tense, but also like sort of nervously laughing, I love that. I really want to play at that because it gets such a visceral reaction from you. But then I always want to make sure that the scares genuinely hit, you know, regardless. I think that a lot of people can try to cross their arms, whatever, but like, those are the people I'm trying to scare. And that the themes, like you said, they're very heavy. But I always want to play the emotional truth of stuff. And I think that's really important. That's what's sort of carrying us across the film, is sort of putting you in this character's shoes, you know, in their subjectivity, and really what's happening to the character. I want the movie to do that to the audience, you know? And so, yes, the smiles can be silly and funny and whatever, but the character's journey and like sort of the harrowing circumstances and the, you know, the very visceral scares, it's about making sure that those hit. And it's almost that juxtaposition between the silliness and sort of the much more serious stuff that almost throws your brain off and hopefully freaks you out even more.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to put a spoiler warning on this so we can talk about specifics, but I really wanted to dig into the ending of this movie with you, because in terms of reactions, I've seen nothing but just pure excitement about the way that you executed that final concert scene and the implications that it has for this franchise potentially moving forward. Was that always the ending that you had in mind?
Yes. So okay. When I sit down to write, I don't start writing the script until I know the ending. And it was the same deal on the first one. You know, I always knew that Rose was going to die and that Skye was going to die as well. And for me, it felt like the inevitable place that we would take Skye's story, and that it didn't matter if that thought occurred to people, because the journey of how we get there is going to be surprising and effective. And the execution of that ending was hopefully going to blow out whatever anybody might have had in their mind to get there. And so, you know, for me, it felt like I wanted to blur the lines between reality and fiction with this character of Skye, but also to sort of have this meta commentary at the end about, you know, not only the audience sort of like staring through the screen at the audience in the movie theater, the audience that's in the arena, this idea that, are we somehow complicit in what's happened here by coming back for a smile too? Have we done this to Skye, you know, which feels very apropos to celebrity and fandom and parasocial relationships. And at the same time, on the other side of the coin, this idea of celebrities and people with platforms and their influence over large swaths of people. And it felt so deliciously smile to sort of say like, well, this influence, this person who's literally on stage, literally on a platform, and what she is, you know, spreading into the world, that felt very sort of exciting to me.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm guessing you probably can't talk very much about what you would like to do with this moving forward, but would you like to do something with it moving forward? I don't think there's been any announcements about a potential Smile 3 yet, but is that a world that you are interested creatively in sticking around for a while? Do you have like stories that you think could work in that universe still?
I think there's a lot of exciting things that could still happen in Smile. For me, the through line of Smile, besides the Smiler itself, but the is this idea of telling really intense character stories, going into these characters' worlds that then Smile sort of invades. And I feel like that feels like something really exciting about the opportunities that could be there. I'd want to make sure that it's, you know, if there were more stories to be told, that they feel very fresh and unexpected, and there's a reason for the audience to come back beyond just maybe the success in the box office. We'll have to see.
Thanks very much, Parker, for your time. I appreciate it. And congrats on the movie. I'll talk to you later.
Absolutely. Thanks, Ben.
All right. I hope you all enjoyed that conversation. Smile 2 is now available on digital and it'll be coming to 4K, Blu-ray, and DVD on January 21st, 2025. You can find more about Smile 2 at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few pieces in the show notes of this episode as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
Hey there, podcast enthusiasts. Are you tapping into the potential of podcasting to boost your brand? Here's something remarkable. 67% of the U.S. population tunes into podcasts. That's not just listeners. It's a community. And let me tell you, the emotional bond between listeners and their favorite podcasts is stronger than ever. Don't just take our word for it. Visit catsdigital.com to explore success stories from advertisers who trust podcasting to deliver results. Discover more at katzdigital.com.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.